No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome into the Blake Street Banter. It's the Rockies Insider on Blake Street Banter. Me, Patrick Lyons, along with my co-host, Noah Spirek. Noah, Rockies have won 2 games since our last show. Now, granted, it was about 2 weeks ago, but still, 2 games, it's a good pace.
And we were treated to them on 2 straight days for the first time in what I believe it had been 235 days since the last time that had happened, which is just crazy, but we got to experience that. Now they've followed suit with 3 straight losses, but we got those 2 days.
And they didn't lose 14 in a row on the road to set a new franchise record. They only tied it. So, I mean, yeah, they still have... It is still the worst stretch of 13 games on the road, but it's also tied with another 13-game stretch where they lost in all 13. So, man, when they go out to San Francisco, it does feel like it's just a whole other planet, probably more so than any other place. I mean, Miami has to be up there, but San Francisco is definitely one of the hardest spots for the Rockies to come away with a win. I mean, Dodger Stadium, too. You know what? Forget it. Anytime they're out on the road, just... It's going to be a hard W.
And all those freaking division opponents are right there at sea level. So it's as hard as it gets for the Rockies. I mean, in Arizona, they're above 1,000 feet. So that helps. But all the Padres, Dodgers, Giants, you named them, it's just so tough to ask for the lineup to adjust.
Once the team from Salt Lake City, which I don't know if they'll go by Salt Lake City. I think they'll probably be in Utah, the Utah Yeti. Once they come around, then the Rockies all of a sudden will become these road warriors because they'll feel at home, kind of at altitude a little bit. We'll wait and see. But let's talk about the month of April. It's been over for a little while. How bad it was. What players are we buying stock in and saying, you know what? They actually played well. They're going to continue. Or they've been so bad. Are they going to turn it around? They have to. But will it be markedly different? The month of April ended at 5-25, so they were on a 135 loss pace. Well, they won that last game before they went back against Atlanta, then won in San Francisco. So now they're 6-28 with only a 133 loss pace. How much is that going to improve? When is that going to improve for them?
You know, I thought that we'd see some improvement, not instantly, but soon after the Rockies named Clint Hurdle as the new hitting coach. And it's actually gotten worse by OPS and runs per game, I believe. But the Rockies, it can't continue to be this bad. And I don't think it will be. And I don't think it's overly optimistic to say, okay, the Rockies will not continue to be all-time bad. It feels like they've lost a lot of one-run games and been right there. And it was a positive sign to see them win game one in San Francisco, a place that, look, after a long Coors Field homestand, most games they put up 0, 1, or maybe 2 runs, and they put up 4 on their way to getting a win against the Giants. But there's got to be signs of life, and right now we'll talk about him more later in the show, but Herman Marquez, it's been the worst stretch. I think I saw your tweet of his career. We're a 7-game stretch, and you know that he is trying his hardest. Yesterday night, he actually posted on Instagram, and the caption read, just keep trying until it clicks. So you know that he's working hard behind the scenes, but the Rockies, the wins have to start coming.
And I think he's going to get those opportunities to continue to start. I think I mentioned on Sunday's live Rockies Insider. You might have just heard us on the Rockies Insider podcast if you listen to us on the audio only format, but that, you know, maybe there's a chance for Marquez to get out of the rotation, put him on the IL now that Bradley Blaylock has shown that he's been stretched out a little bit and can stay in the rotation. And totally forgot that Ryan Feltner in this trip in San Francisco ended up going on the 15-day IL. So Marquez will continue to get a chance for those kind of things to start clicking. You mentioned the one-run ball games. It's definitely felt like a lot, probably for the Rockies in general. It's probably on par with what most teams have gone through at this point in the season. There's been 9 one-run games. They are 3-6 in those games, 0-2 in extra innings, and just 17 games back of the first place Los Angeles Dodgers after a little more than a month. So I think you're right. I think things will turn around. I mean, shoot, if you're saying right now, if you're looking at their pace as 133 losses, and then they quote unquote only lose 122 to set the new modern day record by the White Sox last year, well, that's somewhat of a turnaround. I think it'll still even be better than that, but I'm not willing to bet the house on it.
No, and I'm right there with you. I think it's been surprising to see the Rockies kind of get national attention for being national attention for the wrong reasons. ESPN's Pat McAfee show did a segment on it with Jeff Passan coming along and talking about the team. Last year's White Sox were the worst team ever in baseball history, and they might be unseated in the first year after that. So it's wild to see because, I mean, anytime the Rockies are in the national media, it normally is for the wrong reasons, but I don't know. Now, after that segment, they did win 2 straight games. So maybe they just need more national attention on them to fire up the team. But regardless, right now, good teams find ways to win, and the Rockies are finding ways to lose. Coming into the year, they seem to place defense as what they were going to hang their hat on this season, which, you know, in the modern era of baseball, you do what you will with that information. But the defense has not been up to Rocky standard because they are normally very good, at least in recent years. But without the good defense, it feels like every infield hit leads to another run for the other team. And it all just comes back to that's you find yourself losing by 1-2 runs. And after that, it just gets out of hand.
They haven't been imploding like they did a lot in 2024. They're just getting outplayed, and there's a lot of great teams in the National League, and when you are one of the worst, you are just not going to get any kind of a reprieve. Like, that's just not going to happen. You're going to continue to play really difficult teams. In fact, the next time that they play, take a wild guess. When do you think the next time the Rockies play a team below 500? I know you probably don't have it memorized, the schedule, but take a guess when they might play a team that you go, you know what, we might be able to actually win this series.
I think it's against the team we already talked about in the Marlins.
Oh. In early June yeah, 2nd through 4th. And it's in Miami too. So that's a challenge. You're not going, no one's going to give you a break. You know, Dick Monfort said in the offseason that, man, I wish it really wasn't this tough. And I don't know. That's just not something that I think comes out of a lot of people's mouths, because wasn't it Henry Ford that said that something easy isn't worth doing? And right, like, you go to college, if your teacher, you know, said, you know, practice your cursive or fill in this word search, it would be boring because it wasn't a challenge. That's what makes professional sports so much fun. And when it becomes difficult, that's when, you know, the going get tough and the tough get going. The tough say, you know what? Let's figure out a way to solve this. It seems like an impossibility. It seems like the cards are stacked against us, but we've got to be able to find a way to figure this out. And perhaps owner Dick Monfort that's just not his game.
No. And look, the Avalanche lost a game 7 just 2 days ago. The Nuggets won theirs and they're going to continue to play. But once the Nuggets, you know, if they don't win the NBA finals, once they're done, Denver's eyes are going to be on the Rockies. And at that point, if the Rockies haven't started even sputtering, like even turning on the car, I'm a bit worried for, I mean, we haven't seen plastic bags at the paper bags at Coors Field, but if there's ever a time that it would reach that, if this team's entering June with a still 30-win pace, that's very large cause for concern, obviously.
When you started saying that about Denver sports fans turning their eyes to the Rockies, I thought, well, that just means the attendance is going to be that much better because there's going to be less things to do and less things to distract you than rather say, well, you know, the Nuggets play tomorrow. Let me get some good rest tonight because they play on a Wednesday night. And so I want to make sure I get from tip off all the way to the end, maybe even listen to, you know, Barkley and Shaq in the post game and all that. So I'm going to rest up, even though I'm off today. My eyes are set on tomorrow. So that's now locking up 2 days that I could potentially be going to a Rockies game. But that point you made about, you know, those Rockies fans that, or those Denver sports fans turning their eyes to the Rockies, some are going to just go to games and just enjoy that and say, all right, well, now I'm back at Coors Field maybe earlier than I would have liked because I was hoping to have a run for the NBA championship or another run for the Stanley Cup. But there's going to be those other groups of fans that say, you know what, I'm a little bit sick and tired of this. And I'm a, maybe a creative type, or I want something to change. I want something to happen. And yeah, you could start to see those paper bags come out and you could start to see somewhat of a groundswell. I know I've seen a couple people on social media suggest there've been, you know, there's going to be a protest on this day or whatever, and nothing has gained traction, or maybe they're just trying to wish it into being. We haven't seen that. And I honestly don't think that we will.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see if there would be that kind of passion, for lack of a better term. Sometimes passion doesn't have to have any benefit because I despite the fact that we could get protests or boycotts or anything like that, I don't think that's going to change Dick Monfort still being the owner of this team. He's not going to sell. I think it would be embarrassing, but not embarrassing enough to totally get rid of something that you want to hand your sons. You want to hand your children to run this team. That being said, you can have a passion for something and it not have a goal. You just need an outlet to do this thing. And even if it doesn't change the world, it's still important for you to do that. And so what you're saying, you know, very much could be an outcome of an early exit for the Nuggets next.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that nothing like what happened with the A's, where, I mean, they loaded the stadium last year with a bunch of green shirts that said sell the team.
Reverse boycott, which yeah. I didn't even know that was a thing, but
exactly.
It is.
It made major headlines, but ultimately did nothing. I think if the Rockies fans, and I'm not saying that they should or should not do this, but if the Rockies fans, you don't see any paper bags, you don't see any sign of, you know, online what you were mentioning where fans are saying we have to do this or that on different day to show that we care. Is that just a sign of apathy? Is it worse that there's not anything like that happening than if there was something negative happening? Because apathy is almost the greatest threat to a fan base in a franchise.
It's true. Yeah. You know, I can remember being a young person and going, wait a minute, the opposite of love isn't hate, because those are still emotions. Those are still, you know, something strong that you feel toward. There's still feeling involved. The opposite of love and hate is apathy, where you just don't care about the thing. And I don't necessarily know that that is going to change. I don't know that's going to be something. And I think that I don't know necessarily what that means for the fan base or what that means for people when describing the fan base. Like, sure, there are some folks that could look and say, well, this fan base just, it really isn't passionate enough, or it isn't really that big, right? I think you could look at what's going on in St. Louis and the fact that their attendance is down drastically for the quote unquote best fans in baseball. Well, you know, what makes them the best fans, or what makes anyone the best fans? Is it going and supporting even when your team is bad, or is it staying away when they're bad? But we're not staying away because it's bad and we're fair with the fans. We're staying away to send a message. And that's where it can get, you know, complicated, and you give someone credit for something they didn't do, or I don't really know. So I think it's a bad thing all around to have apathy for your fan base.
Well, in your tweet, it did numbers because you clipped what one of the ESPN talk shows had said, because they turned around what the Rockies being on the struggle bus so bad so far this season, and said, credit to Colorado. They have the most dedicated fans in the sport because they're still pushing out. I think it's 26,000 a game right now, and it might have even gone up because it was a weekend series against the Braves. So That was a weak series. But regardless, the Rockies fans are still churning out. And I mean, you clipped that tweet. What were kind of the responses to that? Because it got a lot of traction.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I think when you're a fan and when you're in the world of sports, you can put fans in different categories. And at the end of the day, when you're Dick Monfort, when you own a baseball team, the bottom line is ticket sales. And so whether you're a Rockies fan that can go and name all the affiliates or some of them, or name some of the prospects, or you're just a Rockies fan in the sense that you want to go out to the ballpark and witness a sporting event where anything can happen. And if that anything means the Rockies lost, like, so be it. I just want to get out and I want to go to an event. It's like going to a concert. It's like, imagine if you lived down the street from Red Rocks, you wouldn't care who was playing. You'd be like, yep, I get tickets, or I'm a season ticket holder. And then I go and, oh man, it's like EDM music. And then the next, it's like a country artist. And you're like, this is still cool. This is still part of that experience, despite the fact that I don't really know who's on stage right now. I don't know if they're good or bad, if they're a new artist that's on the come up, or they're an older artist that's on their way down and on their way out. And I think the Rockies could be a metaphor for something like that, where Coors Field very much is Red Rocks, but for professional sports and for Major League Baseball. And, you know, again, you could split hairs and say, well, how many of those people are Colorado Rockies baseball fans? I don't know that how much that matters, honestly. Certainly doesn't matter, again, to ownership, because the bottom line is ticket sales. But if you're a Colorado Rockies baseball fan, I would understand if you are very frustrated right now that there are other people going to games that aren't Colorado Rockies baseball fans. They might be baseball fans that are going to see the opposing team. They might be fans of going out to a live sporting event. They might be Denver sports fans, or they might just be people looking for a thing to do. They might be in their 20s and they're going out to meet other young people up in the rooftop. And that would not qualify as a quote unquote Colorado Rockies baseball fan. And because of that, that muddies the water as to what group each person might qualify in. And it also muddies the message that you may want to send to ownership, because there's always going to be, at least in Denver, and this is really only true in Denver, there's going to be someone that will take your seat. A lot of other markets, you don't show up, no one's going to take that seat. And in Colorado, that's not true.
Yeah, I think you did a really great job of encapsulating everything there. One of the first things you said, I'll touch on, like, who cares if the Rockies are bad? We're going to go and watch a game because it is Coors Field. I think a belief exists for a large portion of the fan base. We're going to watch the Rockies because even if they're bad, Coors Field is it's home of runs, it's home of home runs, and it's exciting. And so I've seen a lot of this on the X that, you know, we'll watch the Rockies be bad. We will not watch them be boring and bad. And I think that's an important characteristic that so far this season, you know, I'm trying to think, the Rockies' last home run, it was Ryan McMahon in the Giants series. Was that the second game?
I think it was the first one on Thursday, because Friday and Saturday they had no extra base hits. And then on Sunday they had the three triples.
Yeah. So,
but by the way, did you know, and I think I did mention this on the show. I did a post game show on Thursday. That was a unicorn home run. It only was a home run at Oracle Park because it's 391 to center field. Fenway is 390, but they got like a 15-foot wall. So it only would have been a home run at Oracle Park. And that snapped his over 35 streak as well.
Which was some sort of franchise record set on air, which is shocking. I knew McMahon had been 2 for 59 is what it ultimately reached, but 0 for 35 as well. I had not known that. Good for Mac, because ever since that home run, he did actually do pretty good in the series. So he's finally breaking through, and hopefully that leads to a Rockies breakthrough. But entering May, the numbers were just bad in April, and we're about to break them down. How bad? And Patrick, I'll just ask you, like, historically, how bad was April in, I guess we'll count the end of March for the Rockies?
Offensively, it was the worst month in 33 years of baseball. So you're looking at about 180 months of baseball, and March and April are usually coupled together because it's just a couple days in March, and most baseball seasons don't, at least historically, have never even started in March. So it's been the worst. And, you know, it's number one or dead last, however you'd want to phrase it, in terms of batting average, 211, on base percentage, 282. So that means 28% of the time hitters are reaching base. And then the slugging is 350. And what's interesting is you said before about boring, right? I can remember at the end of 2022, that being one of the most boring ends to a season. And they didn't even lose 100 games then. In fact, in 2023, I've said this before, 2023 was not boring at all. They lost 103 games, but you had Nolan Jones emerging. You had Ezekiel Tovar. You had Brenton Doyle, who wasn't doing it with the stick yet, but he was doing it defensively. And it was like, okay, this is an exciting product, an interesting product at least, to watch, despite the fact you're getting nothing from the starting rotation because they had Urania, Flexen, Chase Anderson, Ty Block, all of these cast-offs that you needed to be in your rotation because you had no depth. But it was at least exciting. In September/October of 2022, other than having Ezekiel Tovar debut, which was interesting, I guess it was mildly exciting, but he didn't do too much except for that first home run at Dodger Stadium. But they were so bad and boring. Here's the starting lineup for the final Rockies home game of the 2022 season. Ryan McMahon led off. That was part of an experiment because he sees a lot of pitches. He does draw his walks. Batting second in center field, Jonathan Daza. Your number three hitter in right field was Randall Grichuk. CJ Chrome was your cleanup. It was hitting cleanup at first base. DH, Charlie Blackmon. Batting sixth, Elias Diaz. Second base, Alan Trejo. Shortstop, Ezekiel Tovar. In left field, Sean Bouchard. In other words, many of the same players that are on the team right now in 2025. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Jeez. Yeah, that was – at the start, the lineup was kind of mixed up. Rockies legend, Jonathan Daza, he played so often and had that 400 month where he hit 400. That was amazing. That's one of the greatest months in Rockies history, I have to imagine. But – gosh, I mean, Alan Trejo coming back, trading for him for cash. I don't know if that happened after our last show. So
it's
been 2 weeks.
And here's something that I learned that I didn't know. I asked Bill Schmidt because I had made an assumption as to, like, how do the player to be named later, how does that work? I always thought, I don't know why, I always thought you would basically have a list of players like, okay, almost like an expansion draft. In an expansion draft, you're essentially protecting a certain number of players, and then everyone you don't protect can be nabbed. So I thought player to be named later was like, all right, we're going to protect, you know, 100 of our best prospects, maybe even 125, and you give us the list, and then we'll scout the remaining 50 or whatever, and then that will be the player to be named later, when in fact it's literally just, here's a list of five guys and let us know in a month or so which you actually want. And the Rangers said, we don't want a list from you, Colorado. We'll just take the cash considerations.
Okay, I did not know that's how that worked either. But just seeing that trade happen for cash, I thought was surprising because it feels pretty rare that, you know, it's just a one-for-one like that. But goodness, having McMahon hit leadoff now seems like such a foreign idea. But at the time, man, why not? McMahon, he would have been entering – at the end of 2022, he would have been end of his fifth full year.
There's still plenty of hope to say, hey, this could be a 30-home run bat, whereas now we know that really is not going to happen. Also, when you look at OPS, as far as the worst months in franchise history, three of the bottom five have been the month of May. 93, the expansion year – 2006 and 2021. So we might not be out of the woods just yet. If May is that month where they seemingly have those struggles, it could happen again. Philip in the chat, I kind of like Mac in the fifth spot when he was in his slump. Look, he's still going to give you a good at bat. Their end result may be a strikeout, and he's a guy that you still know has, or you feel like he still has that thump in his bat to pull through in a spot like that. But we saw, it might have been that Thursday night game, Michael Tolia hitting third for the first time in his career. And then Hunter Goodman over the weekend, was batting third. So, you know, Buddy has, you know, maneuvered the lineup just a little bit to try to get those best batters early in the lineup. I mean, Jordan Beck hit leadoff in a game last week at Coors Field. So, you know, Buddy's doing what he can. Not that this is any kind of defense of him. Look at the roster right now. I don't know how you could possibly make a noticeable change. It's not as if Jordan Beck continues to hit ninth and there's some kind of, well, it's like a double leadoff thing. No, he's just going to get that many less at-bats if you hit him ninth. So the lineup offensively is really struggling, and so it has to get better, right? It just has to.
Yeah, and to the point about McMahon, I'm looking at his Baseball Savant page now, trying to see if there's anything noticeable from the past several seasons to this season that changed. And one of the more interesting things I'm seeing that is a buzzword in baseball right now is bat speed. 2023, he was swinging 72.2 miles an hour. 2024, 72.5. And those both ranked 50th and 60th percentiles. And then this year, he's swinging 74.2, which is 84th percentile. So maybe it's him trying to do too much, but Ryan McMahon is swinging the bat harder than he has in his career, and just not making his barrel. His average exit velocity is very highly ranked, but it's just not happening enough of the time.
Well, that's why, you know, so many of these things are buzzwords or buzz terms that isn't a one size fits all for players. Like you said, that exit velocity averages 93.5 miles an hour. That's in the 94th percentile. And yet this has been one of his worst years at the plate. So hitting the ball hard doesn't exactly equate to having success. Now that could be some underlying factor of, hey, maybe success is on the way for a certain player. But if that's not your game exactly, that might not be a fit. It's like the torpedo bat. We really haven't heard much about it since that first weekend, and players have gotten those bats in. That's got to be on my to-do list this week at the ballpark and say, hey, you would have gotten your torpedo bat by now at this point. Have you used it in the game? Is it working for you? Because it's just not something that works for every single player. Like Tony Gwynn, he used a size 31 bat. He used a small bat. He didn't try to say, well, I'm a really good hitter. I want to cover more of the plate, so I'm going to have a longer bat and make it torpedo and make it a gigantic barrel. Like you need to utilize the skills that you have and the tools that are available for you. And all the tools that help one guy aren't necessarily going to help another, and vice versa. And that's something that, you know, maybe we do start to see an adjustment from McMahon to maybe get away from some of the things that he worked on in the offseason to make himself better. Those adjustments, similar to Chase Dolander changing up his slider grip at Tennessee in 2023, that made him worse. It didn't actually make him better.
Yeah, well, regardless of what it is that has to change, right now, I mean, I'm looking at McMahon specifically. His home-away split, he's hitting 191 at home and 147 on the road. Neither one of those is good, but we talked about the more things change, the more things stay the same. The Rockies have been struggling on the road again this year, and they always will. But, Patrick, it's been a historic rate of struggle for the Rockies on the road this year. Tell us about that.
2-17, which is a 105 winning percentage. In other words, 10% of the games on the road they've won. They're on pace. So we talk about losing 133 games, or, you know, you lose 121 like the White Sox last year. Okay, you won 41. That still seems crazy low. But if you just look at the pace they're on for games won away from Coors Field, it's 9. So 7 more wins this year. The sad thing is, I don't know that it's going to be a lot more than that, right? They're gonna win a couple back-to-back games where a team is going to be caught flat-footed, like, say, the Reds or someone like the Pirates, and you go, oh, wow, they won a series in Pittsburgh or in St. Louis, which they did a couple years ago. And you go, oh, wasn't expecting that. That's going to happen. That's part of baseball. That's going to help them maybe win 15 games on the road. But that is something that they've always struggled with. And I don't know that that is going to get a lot better. You know, in 2021 and 2005, they were also 2-17, and their 20th game of this on the road that season in 2021 and 2005. They won those games. So that means next Monday, the pressure is on. If the Rockies lose that game against the Rangers in Texas, that will set the low water mark for fewest amount of wins through the first 20 games on the road in Rockies history.
And with the way that technology has advanced and the views that the batters have and all of the kind of, the pitching machine that changes based on the, not the dimensions, but the weather and the ecosystem of all these ballparks, I would have thought that the road splits would continue to improve with advanced technology. But for, I mean, whether it's lack of talent, the Rockies being on a pace to win 9 road games, that can't, I mean, there's no way that can happen. You say it can't get, it might not get much better than that. But if this team wins single digit road games all season, that's a record that would never be touched. And I feel confident saying that.
Well, you touched on it yourself in terms of why is okay. Technology improves, but you know, you and I, if we're given the greatest technology and the greatest coaches in the world and, you know, athletic, you know, all anything you want, right? You want to pump us with some great nutrition and all that stuff, legal or illegal, we're only going to be so good. So technology can only go so far. So I think a lot of that just has to do with the talent that the Rockies have had, or rather the talent that they haven't had. And I think that's, you know, a big contributing factor. And so that doesn't mean, and still, there's always opportunities. There's always opportunities. And that's the one thing you really hope doesn't get left by the wayside. And it doesn't seem like it is, but you know, there's a lot that we don't know that's going on behind the walls. Even as part of the media, when you ask the right questions, there's still so much that we don't get to see. But you hope that right now, despite this awful lull that this franchise is having, that they don't totally give up on the technology side, because there are still some things that they can learn now that when they do get better personnel, when they do get better players, and they are coming out of these doldrums, that, oh, now coupled with the technology of things that they learned from 2022 through 2025 and 2026, now bring those two things together. So there's still opportunities right now, more behind the scenes, but opportunities right now for them to get a little bit better.
Yep. And you mentioned when they get better players, that certainly helps. The problem is the players that figure to be the pieces that get the Rockies back into the postseason picture, they either have been struggling greatly or they're hurt. Charlie Condon, one would imagine he has to become an all-star and a centerpiece in the Rockies lineup for the Rockies to reach Rocktober in the near future. He's been hurt. He'll try to come back. I think watching Zach Veen go to the majors and struggle like he did, then go back to AAA, and you know, maybe it's good for him to get a taste, make the necessary adjustments, and try again when he inevitably gets called back up. But right now, you look at the lineup, and gosh, when Kyle Farmer and Nick Martini are playing, the Rockies might be in a game better, but how much value is it adding to the franchise down the line when they want to compete and win? And it's very tough to not reason with that, but kind of along those lines. And, you know, Tovar has been hurt for the whole season, it feels like, and Brenton Doyle has been going through a whole lot of things, baseball and not. So the Rockies haven't gotten a break at all this season. But one of the bright spots, you know, Chris Beck in the chat talking about Jordan Beck, how do we like him in the two hole? He's been doing great. He hit 5 homers in 2 games, and yesterday cranked out, I believe, 2 triples in 1 game, or he had 2 triples within the last week. But Jordan Beck's been delivering at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. He leads the team with a 139 OPS plus, and that is a player that you say, well, is that going to continue? And a lot of that OPS plus is aided by those 5 home runs in the course of 36 hours. But you're right. He continued to hit for extra bases with the triples. And he's been a guy that Buddy has very much believed in and said, no, this is going to be one of those players. When you look at his preference, it's Beck, Veen, Yankiel Fernandez. And so far, Bud Black has been right in determining, you know, who is going to contribute sooner versus later, and maybe even who just has the higher upside overall. We'll still wait to see what happens with Yankiel Fernandez, who's still just 22 years old. But Beck in the two hole, I think that's been a really good addition, hitting behind Brenton Doyle. Again, you want your best bats coming up in the first inning, getting the most opportunities. Nick Martini coming off the bench probably provides you a little bit more value. It's like you said, Farmer and Martini in the lineup, it's like damned if you do, damned if you don't. It might help you out a little bit more to win a game, but how much is that worth? On the flip side, it might allow some of your younger players to not get overexposed. And again, would you rather have Zach Veen up in the majors or down in AAA? Well, majors, but what if he's not playing regularly? And what if there are some things that he does need to work on? Is he more likely to fix those things in the minors or the majors? And, you know, again, regular playing time is going to be one of those things that's going to allow him to snap out of that. Same thing with Herman Marquez. He's going to continue to get the ball every 5 days, and that can allow him to work and adjust certain things versus sitting on the sidelines where you don't get a chance to really work on anything. And Burge here in the comments saying, how much of a player's development today is entirely dependent on the size and funding of their analytics department? That's a good question, and I don't actually know the answer to that, but I feel like the number is about 10 to 15% better. I think good analytics department and doing a lot of things behind the scenes to help a player get a little bit more out of themselves helps them improve 10 to 15%. What does that mean exactly? I don't know. That means a 20 homer guy is going to now hit 22, but maybe he builds a little bit more momentum and now it's going to be more like 25. But there's going to be other facets of their game that's going to be that much better. So it's not huge, but in the game of baseball, which is also referred to as the game of inches, 10 to 15% can be critical. And the Dodgers do those things better than anyone else. They picked up Justin Turner, Max Muncy, Chris Taylor, all those guys off the scrap heap, and they were able to contribute in big ways. And each and every year, you go and look at the players that contributed for them, and you are going to see some names in that bullpen that you've never heard of and you may never hear of again. And yet you're saying 3.25 ERA, was 4-for-4 in save opportunities, had 15 holds. They get more from their players. And a lot of that does have to do on the player development side, as you point out, Burge, with analytics, the size of the analytics and the focus of those investigations, if you will.
Yeah, and I want to stick with this because our own Tyler Patter sent out a tweet recently talking about, you know, this is not a 120 loss pacing team talent-wise. Now it is 130, but you know, who's counting? But Ty says the talent does not matter when the org doesn't cultivate it on a macro in development or micro in-game strategy scale. And he uses Chase Dolander as an example. He said, look, 29 other teams would line up to make Dolander part of their future. And at the time, Dolander had only started 4 games. He gave up 8 homers and 4 starts. Command has been an issue, but the game plan with his fastball is problematic and exaggerating the damage. I think Tyler does a great job of giving such a finite example of the organizational-wide problem. And Burge's comment and your thoughts about an improved department could improve a player 15%, that's not a scientifically proven response, but it's simple stuff that the Rockies have to try to help their young players do. And, you know, we can't say for sure if they are or are not doing that.
And you're correct. And I would even say, you know, if you had 10% 1 year and then 10% the next year, which that's sort of what we think of as for young players, right? Like Brenton Doyle was 10 to 15% better in his sophomore year than when he was a rookie in 2023. And he's certainly shown signs when he's been healthy and on the field of like, okay, he's about to take that next step again, another 10%. How much does that have to do with the Rockies working with him in the analytics department? How much of that is just him? We know that that hasn't been the same growth for a lot of other Rockies, but I think with those that with the right pieces of information, because again, it's not one size fits all, just like with the torpedo bats. It's here's the right information that you need to make that adjustment to get an extra 10 or 15% out of it. Doesn't have to be, let me put on extra 25 pounds of mass. No, it's continue doing what you're doing, but let's make these tweaks to get an additional 10% out. Cedric wanting to know, Cole Carrig, thought, only one thought. Baseball player. One thought from you now, Cole Carrig.
He's dependable.
Dependable. All right, there we go. Thank you, Cedric. I don't think we're going to see him by the end of this year, but we could end up seeing by early next year, which feels, you know, feels pretty quick. Talking about how bad they've been on the road, their offense has not been offensing at all. Going into Sunday's game in San Francisco, they had the lowest batting average, 184, the lowest on base and slugging, and a 524 OPS, all last in baseball. They had 182 strikeouts, so a little bit more than 10 per game, while averaging 2.2 runs per game. Hey, they did get three on Sunday, so they just bumped that number up. They are striking out a little bit less with Hurdle, but overall, that hasn't necessarily produced better outcomes. They haven't scored more runs because of that. Now, that might be taking a step back in order to take two steps forward. Could be something like that. We'll have to wait and see. But those 2.2 runs per game entering Sunday made the Rockies one of six teams during the divisional era. So 1969 was when we first got four divisions to score 39 or fewer runs in their first 18 road games. The last team to do that, the 1988 San Diego Padres. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, that's 37 years, if my math serves me correctly. Goodness. Rockies weren't even around at that point, obviously. But yeah, it's, you know, I have their schedule pulled up in front of me, and this week it won't be easy at all. You're playing the Tigers for three, who I believe still lead the American League. And then the Padres come in, and they've been right there with the Dodgers all year. And after that, it's almost like we're looking at a homestand, but with the numbers that the Rockies have put up on the road, it's kind of interesting to see, okay, what's their next road trip? At the Rangers for three, at Arizona for three. So we'll have to check back in with the records in another week and a half, because then that's when the road games occur. But this week, what do you have your eye on for the Rockies? Because they're going to go up against three great arms. So what would be a sign of success against the Detroit Tigers?
Gosh. Look, there's three really good pitchers lining up for the Tigers. Jackson Jobe, Casey Mize, and Tarik Skubal. I sort of surmise that maybe – I think the Tigers go back home. So this is their third city. This is a three-city trip for them on the road. That maybe they could push Tarik Skubal back a day to start a series against the Rangers. And you say, all right, that's one where maybe you want to – you save your ace, save the reigning Cy Young Award winner. However, with the bad weather pouring in, they might not be able to be cute, so to speak, or strategic. They might need that 27th man. They might need a long reliever. You don't know what's going to happen. Should there be a doubleheader with a cancellation on Tuesday? We'll see. So if that does happen, that increases the likelihood that Skubal will start on Thursday. But I think it also increases the odds that the Rockies might at least be able to win one game against the Tigers and split the doubleheader, which, you know, it happens more times than not. But against the Tigers team that has been really good and continues to build momentum after what they did at the end of 2024 with AJ Hinch, you know, are they catching the Tigers at the right time? No, because they're not getting three really great pitchers. But Jackson Jobe, still an unproven product, still a young guy. You might be able to get a couple runs early in the game. That's where it'll be interesting if we do get to see Dolander versus Jobe. It will be this test of who can really withstand some early knockout punches, because we've seen Dolander do that. He could give up three runs in the first and know that's fine, that's okay. This, if I give up three runs over five innings, that was a good start. So I don't stink yet. I wasn't good in the first inning, but my overall performance, it cannot be dictated as bad yet because I'm still in the middle of it. You might even be able to go six and then you get your first quality start, which Dolander is looking to do. But Jackson Jobe, in what will be maybe what is his seventh or eighth career start in his first full season in the majors, now as a starting pitcher, if he gives up three runs in Coors Field, despite everybody telling him, hey, don't worry, there could be a couple things, you might give up four straight singles that end up becoming doubles because the outfield is so big and you give up a bunch of runs, don't worry about that. If you give up a home run, don't worry about that one. It's about the next home run that you got to be thinking about. Is Jackson Jobe, at a year younger, 22 years old, is he going to be able to withstand giving up that big three-run inning and not totally implode and maybe make it a 5 or 6 run inning? You kind of like Dolander's odds a little bit better to go into that start and be able to withstand, you know, a punch to the jaw, and maybe you go down on one knee, but he knows I can get back up. This fight isn't over. I don't know if Jobe is going to have that mental capacity to do that in his first start in Denver.
So if you're a Rockies fan, you're rooting for rain is what I gather.
Maybe. I don't know. That'll be the second Dolander start this year that gets rained out.
Yeah.
The National Series ended up getting pushed back. He was supposed to be the poster child for the City Connects, and it got rained out. His start got pushed back.
That's just a perfect encapsulation of the season right there. You mentioned Skubal potentially getting pushed back. The first time that I had experienced something like that where, wow, a visiting team is really not going to put their best guy out there against the Rockies, that was Paul Skeens last year when Pittsburgh was here. And that was massively disappointing because we all wanted to watch Skeens pitch. Now, I'll be at Coors Field 2 weeks from today. I just realized that while we're live. So that's super exciting. But for you and the rest of the crew that's there, man, y'all, I know you guys want to watch Skubal in person. So I hope that they don't pick to do that. But can you blame teams for doing that? And do the Rockies recognize when teams do that to them? And I'm just asking from a fan to Patrick Lyons, the Rockies insider right now. Like, I would take it personal if I saw another team, you know, oh, we're not even going to put our best guy out there against your lineup.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. You know, certainly it does communicate something about what the rest of baseball thinks about your team. But I don't think there's a ton of players in the clubhouse, in any clubhouse, that would even be aware of that, because you are not looking ahead to your next series. It is one day at a time. You're just worried about that day's starting pitcher. So you might not even hear about Skubal getting pushed back a day until the day of. Like, oh man, how much were you hoping to face Skubal? And in fact, if somebody asks you that question, you might go, oh, I guess we're not facing Skubal, and yeah, I would have loved to. Not even realizing that you were probably supposed to, but now he got pushed back a day.
Okay.
So you might not even know that. The coaching staff would probably have a better idea looking ahead at different things. Barry Scouting. It's a little bit different when it comes to the starting pitcher, because Dolander, okay, he's going to be going against the Tigers. He knows that that's going to be his assignment, and that his next start, I think, would still – whether or not it's Tuesday or Wednesday, is going to be against the Padres. As soon as he's done with the Tigers, sure, he'll go back and look at that video, but then he'll be preparing for San Diego. So he is looking a series ahead. The starting pitcher is doing that. But none of the hitters are looking a series ahead. Nick Martini's not like, I just don't like the matchups here against Detroit, so I'm going to start getting myself ready more for San Diego and thinking about what Nick Pivetta is going to be like. And like, that just doesn't happen. So that's an interesting question, like, to think about. And I think a lot of folks probably have that thought, but for the average player in the clubhouse, I don't really think they're necessarily aware of those things. I'm curious with the poor start that the Rockies have had. Michael Tolia is actually last on the team with a -0.8. So almost -1 wins above replacement. Is that something that continues? Is he able to get into the positives at some point this season?
The Rockies need him to. What I've seen out of Michael Tolia's at-bats it has been rough. It's a whole lot of fanning at the pitches, and it's kind of always been that way. Last year when Mike hit however many homers he did, he was still whiffing at a lot of them. And at one point during the Mets series last year when he hit 3 homers in a game, they threw up a stat. And he might have ended the year doing this. He led baseball in at-bats per home run because it was so, like, if he was going to make contact, it was going to go. This year has not been happening as much. And for a lineup that's been struggling as bad as the Rockies have, they need him to take a step forward, because you hope Doyle can be in the lineup consistently now, put the quad injury behind him, put all the life stuff, you know. The Rockies need a contributing Brenton Doyle because he's one of their best players. I think as we turn to May, and as I'm answering this question, I have another one for you. I don't know if you want to comment on Tolia before, but like now you kind of start building these profiles for who the Rockies All-Star might be. If the voting was today, who would that be, Patrick?
Well, there's not going to be anyone that is the starter based on votes. So it's going to be someone coming off the bench. That's a good question. Let's speculate that on a second, but I just want to add this about Michael Tolia. There was a 10 game stretch after Clint Hurdle took over where he was hitting 324. He was 11 for 34, only struck out six times in 37 plate appearances from the second game of the doubleheader on April 20th through April 30th, and was hitless in only two starts in two of nine starts. So he was doing really well. But then in San Francisco, he was 0 for 15. So and also had seven strikeouts. One of the hardest parts too about wins above replacement is a replacement player is predicated on the position that you play. And there's no position that has more ready-made pop in it than first base. There are players in AAA. I mean, go back and look at what Ryan Noda was able to do last year for the Oakland A's as a Rule 5 pick. Like, you don't see a ton of Rule 5 pick first basemen, despite the fact that you probably could go and poach an all-star first baseman down in the minor leagues. It's just you've got your own all-star first baseman. It's just a spot where there's a lot of depth. So that's one of the reasons why, despite him, you know, having some ups and downs, not being totally atrocious, he's dead last in terms of war. But that has a lot to do with, you know, the machinations of war. Yeah, all-star, we're still a long ways away from it. I know, you know, Brenton Doyle's obviously been really quiet lately, but I think he would probably still have to be the front runner. It does seem like every year Bud Black, you know, is able to whisper in the ear of whoever the NL manager is and say, you know what, this is the guy that I think he's ready. I can't remember who else was in line for that all-star spot in 2021, but it seemed like it was time for Germán Márquez to get his flowers, and he was the one who ended up getting it. Last year, when Doyle and Tovar were both pretty much in a three-way tie with Ryan McMahon, it was Ryan McMahon's turn to get those flowers, and he was the one that ultimately got it. I think the same was also true in 2023, where I think it was McMahon and Diaz, and McMahon wasn't ready. You know, again, that this is just sort of my read on it. He wasn't ready enough for Bud Black. Like, hey, you can take one more step forward. Elias Diaz is doing the things we want him to do. So the tiebreaker is it's Diaz's turn. And then last year, it's McMahon's turn. And so if there isn't really that one standout guy, or if Kyle Farmer continues to hit over 300 and his numbers look really good, but Brenton Doyle is still, you know, a steady contributor and his numbers are still solid right now, or Tovar comes back and is just, you know, Tovar without, you know, being lights out, it's still going to end up being Doyle or Tovar, because those guys, in terms of the Rockies organization goes, you want to see those guys get their flowers and you want to see those guys get that recognition more than a guy that you could argue or even statistically can point to and say, this guy was actually better through the first month plus of the season. Doesn't matter. A lot of it is like a seniority thing, at least for the Rockies. That's what I've seen over the last 4 years, where they've had only one entry into the All-Star game. That's the longest stretch in franchise history that they've only had one entry into the All-Star game.
Yeah, well, I asked the question with Kyle Farmer in mind, because a couple of weeks ago he was the bringer of doom in Los Angeles against the Dodgers. Kyle Farmer was raking, and that he was the one that him and Martini broke through. And yeah, maybe Dinger, we send Dinger to.
I'll say Dinger will be at the All-Star game. So I don't know if that actually answers your question, Noah, but Dinger will be in Atlanta. End quote.
Hey, I don't know if it is Kyle Farmer. I don't think it would be like, congrats to Kyle. I don't think any of the Rockies brass would have had that on their bingo card when they signed him to the offseason deal. But as we get into May, it's fun to think about.
It is. Ryan Feltner leads the team in ERA, 4.75 ERA. that's one where you might say, yeah, okay, I could still see him, you know, once he comes back on the IL, hopefully he's going to be okay. You could see him continuing to lead the team. Will the bullpen still be really good? I don't know if they'll have another string of 79 straight innings without giving up a home run, but the bullpen has been really solid. And I think that's been a spot that I at least thought was going to be a lot better than last year and still maybe around league average. So I don't think they're going to be as good as the stretch that we've seen them in, but I think they are not going to make you rip your hair out as much as in seasons past.
Oh, I'm super glad that you brought them up because I remember our show maybe 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, the Rockies had gotten off to their bad start at 3-13 and the bullpen had struggled. And I was like, dang, like I really thought that's where we were going to be. The Rockies were going to be really good this year. But they have bounced back super nicely. As you mentioned, since April 10th, they have the fourth lowest bullpen ERA in the majors. So the Rockies bullpen is doing a good job, and that may be why it feels like the Rockies are in all of these games. You know, they might be down 5-3 through five innings, and then the offense can't muster up enough to get a comeback, but the bullpen will keep them right there. And that's the little things that help you find wins, and that's what the Rockies are going to look to do as the season moves on.
Yeah. Well, we will certainly wait and see what happens. Looks like the Diamondbacks, as we speak, dropped their new City Connect. And I think they do look similar to the ones that leaked. They weren't exact. But this is like what? Feels like the third in a row that's using purple.
Gosh.
They're going with the purples there. And teal, purple and teal. They look pretty sharp, I will have to say.
Pretty cool. I'm just surprised the text across the front looks so similar to their old ones.
Yeah, still going with the Serpientes. They're going with purple and teal, or maybe it's even turquoise, Arizona born. They've got the little jock tag of the shape of Arizona. It says 1998 on it. They also have a flag patch. They've got a pinstripe with like little diamonds instead of actual stripes, but the diamonds are in a stripe formation. Socks are looking pretty clean. So I guess they're on sale as we speak, and they'll be wearing them. They're going to be wearing them 2 days in a row, actually, May 9th and 10th against the Dodgers. And then the third time they wear them will be against the Rockies on May 16th. So that's like what, like next Friday or next Saturday?
Next Friday. And I was thinking, what if they debuted them against the Rockies because the purple hosting the purple team? That'd be kind of funny. You know, I know that Corbin Carroll has to be the happiest guy about these because in an interview he said that if he could take any color from a baseball team, the Rockies purple is what he liked the most. So the Diamondbacks kind of stealing the Rockies flow with the purple.
A little bit. I'll have to ask Tiny Ponarelli, the clubhouse manager for the Rockies, if Colorado will be able to wear the purple jersey for the City Connect games because they would both be purple tops. And so I'm thinking they aren't going to be able to wear those.
They should
on that game. And yeah,
they should just to it would be a hard watch visually, but to show the league who purple really is.
For sure. I did have one more thing I wanted to say about the purple. That's my old brain going away. Oh, no. I know what I was going to say. So, yeah, these are nice jerseys for the Diamondbacks. Go check that out. It's everywhere right now, I imagine. But you know what? This only makes the Rockies City Connect jersey that much better, honestly, because the Diamondbacks did not go outside the box. Sure, they gave the fans what they wanted. That's great. That's fine. But in the spirit of City Connect, connecting the city or your region – not your team and the fans. Fans and the team are already connected. So sure, that's great fan service. But if you're trying to connect the city to the team and the fans, this doesn't exactly do that in the typical way. It's like it's a low-hanging fruit, and you did that, and that's great. And look, I'm not really knocking that so much as I am applauding what the Rockies were able to do with their City Connect and saying, well, let's just bring back the black vest. Like, sure. Yeah. Would fans love that? Absolutely. But what does that have to do with City Connect, and what has to do with that concept of doing something different and outside the box? Again, that's not really a knock on the Diamondbacks, but it's more of a give credit to the Rockies for what they did on the City Connect. And that only further supports my take that once we get all 30 teams or 28 teams rolling out their City Connect 2.0 jerseys, the Rockies will be in the top 10 of everybody's, if not top 5 of everybody's, just like they were last time.
Yeah, we'll see them again this week on Friday, and then I'm looking forward to seeing them in person Friday the 23rd against the Yankees. Oh, that'll be kind of cool. The road Yankee jerseys against the vibrant Rockies City Connects.
All right. So two things with that. One, Padres fans on social media are going to go bonkers when they see, well, they've already seen it, but they're going to go, oh, you guys are stealing our flow.
Yeah.
You're stealing our Ken and Barbie rollerblading down, in LA, like that image that we have. And it's like, I don't really, they use bright colors, but it's two totally different things. Mm-hmm. That's fine. So Padres fans are going to be in an uproar. And then, yeah, just the classic Yankees road gray with New York across the chest. And then Rocky City Connect, baby. Like, yeah. Okay, quiet it down. This is Major League Baseball. That's probably going to get dunked on by some Yankees fans as well.
Yeah, I was going to say the Rockies need to keep that score close just for that game, because the screenshots might be bad if the Rockies let that get out of hand. I don't know. They're going to call the Rockies the Savannah Bananas or something.
Who? I was just going to say that. It's going to be like Dodgers versus Savannah Bananas. Like, one's a major league team. One, they do a good job selling merch.
Yeah.
All right, what about this idea? I hate it. Love you, Burj. Hate your idea. A Broncos or Avs City Connect jersey like what the White Sox did. No, absolutely not. When I first saw the White Sox one, I hated it because it's just the Bulls. It's just like, hey, let's just do what the Bulls did. Now, there is a tie-in, of course, with Jerry Reinsdorf being the owner of both of those teams. But the White Sox did have red in their jersey for a while. I think it was more red and navy than red and black. So I could kind of give them a pass. And some of their alternative caps look really cool. So the more I see this, the more I'm like, I actually think this will be okay. This will look great. But the initial thought was, you're just doing the Bulls. And so I don't think the Rockies would ever be like, oh, we're just so hard up for money and we've got no creative people in our organization, which couldn't be further from the truth, that, yep, we're just going to do navy and orange. They're not ever going to do that, and they shouldn't.
No, I don't think – I like the Bull – not the Bull. I said that too. When talking to my roommates about these jerseys, I called the White Sox the Bulls. I like the White Sox alternate hats. Those are freaking sweet.
Yes.
If the Rockies tried to do a Broncos or Avs City Connect, I could not see it being with the Broncos colors. With the Avs, maybe, because they already have the mountain logo built in, so you could mesh the mountains. I'm trying to think, but I would be down to see one. I don't know if I'd like buying one or ever buy one. But
no, I actually always thought that – I convinced myself that the Broncos were orange and blue because of the sunrises. Like there are plenty of days where you look like, oh, that's where, no, that's not true at all. So again, I could see a world in which there is something that looks similar to the Broncos, but the Rockies have even said, Aaron Heinrich, who I spoke to before the City Connects were launched, that doing a City Connect that looks like the great and iconic and wonderful and top 10 US state flag of Colorado is, quote, low-hanging fruit. So, yeah, again, looks great. But they did not want to do that because it's been done to death. So the Rockies are smart in that way of, like, we're going to avoid that. So I think they're going to avoid the Broncos. But I could see, I could see the orange and the blue working with a concept than maroon and navy. I don't know how maroon and navy is in nature and is in Colorado, right? Like, those aren't actually natural colors in a sense when you think about Colorado. So
that's true. I often forget the biggest part of the City Connects has to be the connection to the city. So you can't just come up with a cool alternate and call it good. That's I think a lot of fans also think that way, though. They forget that there has to be some meaning.
Yeah, the Rockies did it twice. It'll be interesting to see it. I can't believe we're already thinking about 3 years from now of like, okay, what could they possibly do next and further advance, what's possible with these City Connects. So Diamondbacks, you did a really good job. Rockies, I think more people than not are going to rank them ahead of the Diamondbacks, which I think overall will rank pretty high.
Yeah.
I do think that will end up being good. Noah, go ahead and plug away. Let folks know where they can find you in the quad.
Yeah, on Instagram and X / Twitter, at Noah Spyrick, it's over here, and at Blake Street Banter is where a lot of my thoughts are as well.
At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB, and at Rockies Insider. Go over to the YouTube channel. Make sure you're subscribing to that as well as the Blake Street Banner YouTube channel. Appreciate everybody in the chat. Cedric, Burge, Philip, Chris, Isaac, all y'all. Appreciate you giving us this momentum to go on and put on this great show. But as I like to say, momentum, it can only be as good as your next City Connect.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.